2020 is the year of the nurse and the midwife, as designated by the World Health Organization, or WHO. According to WHO, well-trained midwives can provide 87% of all sexual, reproductive, and maternal health services. In a new study, the impact of midwives adds to the mounting evidence that midwife-led care saves lives, and the data shows how an increase in midwifery-led care could save millions of lives. I'm Sarah Barnes, and you're listening to Friday Podcasts, hosted by the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program and Maternal Health Initiative. Today's episode is the first in a three-part series featuring Indigenous midwives from around the world. Globally, Indigenous women experience worse maternal health outcomes than non-Indigenous women. Indigenous midwives, who typically serve in their own communities, can improve health outcomes for Indigenous women by providing culturally appropriate care. This series has been made possible with the generous support of the International Confederation of Midwives and UNFPA. On today's podcast, I had the pleasure of speaking with Waimarie Onakawa and Camille Harris, who are both registered Māori midwives serving Māori communities in and around Auckland, New Zealand. They have been working together for 5 years to support their communities and honor Māori birthing traditions. In New Zealand, there are currently 3,200 practicing midwives, but only 10% of them report Māori as their first or even second ethnicity. Camille and Waimarie speak to their experiences as midwives, the importance of maintaining traditional Māori practices and investing in midwifery and the next generation of Māori midwives. Thank you both so much for being here today with me on this virtual podcast. I'm eager to dive into our discussion of Māori midwifery. But first, can you walk me through how you came to partner together to serve the Māori community in parts of New Zealand?
Hi, Māori.
Yeah, I can go first. So Camille and I actually met when we were at university studying to be midwives. And I think I can say safely for both of us that there was an instant connection and we're friends pretty quickly and spent much of the degree helping each other get through it. And as upcoming midwives, we always had similar ideas and similar morals and beliefs about not only culture, but also midwifery. And I think we both assumed from our early years of being student midwives that we would eventually work together. And so it was just the natural progression that when we were qualified midwives, it actually was a series of unfortunate events for both of us that led us. It actually forced us together quicker than we ever assumed we'd work together. But it turned out to be the best thing in the world. We're super aligned. We do everything really similarly. We trust each other. Do you have anything to add, Camille?
No, yeah, absolutely. I think that it was just a natural progression. And like you say, we were aligned in the way that we wanted to practice and what our beliefs were. And I know you said there was some unfortunate events that led us to being together. And in a way, you could think that was just the inevitable of, you know, from a cultural perspective, like it was inevitable that that was going to happen, that maybe those things were made to disappear and to happen and whatever, so that we could get on with what we'd both set out to do.
Absolutely, yeah. Fate leading us together. And now, yeah. What a pleasure that we get to not only work together in such closeness to each other and support each other professionally and in our personal lives, but we get to serve our people. We feel like they deserve it. We would want the same if we were the people receiving the service. And we just want to be able to give women, Māori women and whānau, the love and care that we would hope to receive if we were the people being the recipients.
Mm. And I think both of us coming in later in life into you know, this degree and completing this degree. I know for myself anyway, I'm unapologetic. It was always to serve my people. If I'm going to do this as a mature student, the whole aim was to absolutely be serving my people.
I absolutely 100% agree.
That makes a lot of sense. Absolutely. In order to serve Māori women and families in and outside of Auckland, which from what I understand is a huge city and area, how far do you find yourselves traveling for home visits and your home births?
We started off by targeting a small area, but now as I guess popularity for us has grown, so we find ourselves going outside our usual work area more and more now, yeah. Which can be a little bit tricky, but if the woman really suits us and we really suit them, then we are gonna go out of our way to try and make it work. I mean, I couldn't give you an estimate in terms of distance, but yeah. In a day I could easily drive an hour to see a woman and then an hour back, you know, like
and then right. When you have a visit, I'm guessing this must be the same for other Indigenous peoples. It's not just a visit. It's not just an in-and-out visit. Like if there is kai or food cooked and you're offered it, then you sit down and you eat that. You don't, even if you've eaten, you know what I mean? So your visit can actually take a long time.
Yes.
Yes, I understand. In a past life, I did home visitations in Washington, D.C., for pregnant and postpartum women and their newborns. And I could never plan for how long each visit would take. There was always this element of surprise in these situations. So the time commitment for you both is quite real and significant. And you often attend home births together, correct?
Absolutely. So generally one of us will go first and sort of scope out the situation, so to speak, and see how long do we think we've got until this woman is going to be in really strong labor. Of course, that's just the general guidelines. Sometimes we'll both go together from the start. So, and that's for safety, but also really it really helps the atmosphere of a home birth when both of us are there. I don't know, we just sort of seem to sink into these roles automatically, where we're almost reading each other's minds, I think you would say. Like Camille and I have done many, many home births together, and obviously when we're newly working together, that we would have to talk a lot more and discuss and plan and figure things out together. But now we're just automatic. So everything just is so seamless and, yeah, lovely. And we can actually just enjoy ourselves, enjoy the woman's company and her whānau's company, and yeah, it's such a beautiful experience. I really wish everyone could have that opportunity to have a home birth.
It sounds amazing. Building off of this, can you share some of the more unique birthing customs and practices in Māori culture that you are engaged in that want to be part of the birthing experiences of non-Māori women, even if they have the support of a midwife?
Yes, we do. We have lots of different things that we are relearning and trying to keep teaching our whānau and uphold these traditions, such as using muka to tie the baby's cord. And muka is... it's made from the inner fibers of the flax plant. And then it's like the fibers are taken out of the flax plant, and then it's rubbed down along your leg. So it sort of ropes up, if you like. And that is what is used to tie the umbilical cord. And obviously there's, you know, natural healing qualities and all of that in there as well. So that's something that is happening a lot more, but our people are really aware of it. So, yeah, we've been doing that kind of thing. What else? Why?
We'll often have whānau that cut the baby's cord with a special tool made of pounamu or obsidian, or sometimes objects that have been in the whānau that have been passed down over generations. We'll get lots of karakia, lots of waiata, so singing and prayers. We'll often get a specific like ori ori or karanga, which is, I guess, a call, a spiritual call that's made to the baby as baby's being born, and it's often by an elder within the whānau, so a nana or a grandfather. And it's really significant and specific for that baby and that birth. And it's designed to welcome baby into the world from the spiritual realm to the physical realm, but also to give the woman that's giving birth, give her strength and call her ancestors to help her through this, you know, this hard journey. And it's honestly just so emotional when you hear that. You can't, like, I, even just thinking about it now, I'm actually getting a bit like, you know, you're absolutely. Just, yeah, you're taking and taken into a whole different realm, and no, you can't not be affected by it. Yeah, just some beautiful, beautiful experiences. And even in terms of where women give birth, often they choose, we call it papakainga, or their how do you explain that, Camille? Like your home ground where you grew up?
Lands, yeah.
Yeah, homeland, I guess, where possibly where your grandparents lived and their grandparents lived. So it's been in the family for generations, and it's where you associate as home. And so often women will give birth on their papakainga or in a specific location that has huge historical meaning for them, and they might want to give birth outside under the kōwhai tree that's been growing since they were little girls, or they might want to dip their toes in the water that they grew up swimming in as children, or sometimes we've even had women talking about building a whare kōhanga, which is a birth house, and it's specifically built for a woman to give birth in, and only for that purpose, and it's sacred. And then once the birth is completed, the house is burnt down in a ceremonial ritual, and it's sacred. And it's just gorgeous that people actually are excited about these traditions and interested in them. And Camille and I are by no means experts in all of this special tikanga or protocol, but we're learning every day from our patients. And then we can share what we've learned from this woman with the next woman. It's just amazing.
Absolutely. And I think so many of us have little snippets of what we know. That's family, that's between myself and Y. And when we come together and share all of our learnings, that's what's just helping it grow and revive even more. We're all learning on each other, really. Yeah.
Wow. It sounds like Māori families are incredibly involved and engaged in both the pregnancy and the delivery of new family members. And I love the inclusion of ancestry in the conversation around birth. I'm wondering if you could speak a bit more to who traditionally in the family is present at the actual birth.
You know, everybody's really involved all the time, whether that's, you know, the grandmother, the little children. Yeah, everybody's always a big part of the whole pregnancy, labour and birth. When it comes to birth, though, we're always really big on including the men, especially. I mean, including everybody, but there's a real need to reconnect our men and to re-include our men, because it always was pre-colonisation. It always was a very, you know, level, very involved, both men and women. And over time, that sort of changed. And with birthing, you know, as babies being born, like in many countries, I'm sure, the doctor, the obstetrician, the whoever has been the person to put their hands first on baby. So we're really big on, right from the get-go, talking to the fathers about their hands being first on baby, so that their whakapapa, you know, their heritage, who they are and where they're from and all that they carry is first to be on their baby, and the importance of that. So they get to understand that right from the get-go, and they, I don't know, why, how would you say it?
Yeah, I really think it is a profound moment in many men's lives when they are able to be the first to touch their baby. And the head for Māori is a very sacred part of the body. So being the first to touch your baby, but also to be the first to gently hold your baby's head as it's being welcomed into this physical world is such a special moment. And your entire whānau that's in that room, if you're the male delivering this baby, they're all there bearing witness to what magic is unfolding. And it's such a, I mean, it's so spiritual. It just changes you. And we watch often these very stoic, quiet, a little bit shy, even sometimes men melting. And they're just beaming for weeks and weeks after. And it's just so beautiful to see the softer side of these men being reborn through that process.
Even a lot of our men, you know, that carry a lot of trauma, because we have some terrible statistics, you know, with our Māori men and suicide and mental health and all that kind of thing, you know. So we can have some men that would never have imagined doing this, and you see that change in them from the moment they lay their hands first on their baby. So we're big believers that that is, you know, needs to happen for our men especially, that it will change so much more in the long run.
Absolutely. And not only that, another positive thing we see from men being involved in the birth is that postnatally, they are so involved in that woman and that baby's care. This new mum and new dad are helping each other. They're supporting each other. He's looking after her. He becomes the protector. He becomes this person that wants to be involved and knowing everything about how do I care for my wife and my baby now. And the love is shared, and I think it just flourishes from that moment of them being able to bring their baby into the world.
Yeah, wow, that's really incredible. Even sitting in my own space now, that makes me feel emotional. Just the idea of what that could mean for people to have men so involved in the birthing process and afterwards. I think that's really incredible what you're speaking to. And I would think further inclusion of men and boys in pregnancy and delivery and the postpartum could have this ripple effect the world over. So I wonder if you're seeing that in New Zealand, if you're seeing those traditional Maori practices being adopted outside of Maori communities. You know, have you seen some of these things that you're speaking about becoming more mainstreamed and happening outside of your own communities?
I think definitely there's lots of parts of Māori culture and customs that have become really popular in New Zealand, probably even overseas, because there's a lot of Māori people living in Australia as well. But a common practice here in New Zealand, whether you're Māori or not, is burying your placenta. The placenta is special to us because it's kept the baby alive while it's growing inside mum's puku. And then this organ is celebrated once it's born. It's literally the tree of life. And Māori customs tell us that we come from earth, so therefore we return to earth. And part of that belief is then burying your whenua in the ground. So it would often be at your papakainga. So at the place where you call home, which connects you to your people. And lots of people, non-Māori as well, are starting to, you know, get involved in this and adopt this tradition, which is really cool. And we're seeing more and more now that even non-Māori women want moka for their baby's cord, because they just see that it's gentle, it's a natural soft fibre, it heals well. They don't really like the idea of having a big plastic peg on baby's tummy. So those are two things that we see quite commonly being practiced. And they're trying to encourage, you know, that there's moka readily available at the birthing units in various places here in Auckland as well, probably other places around the country.
Oh, excellent. Did you have anything you wanted to add here, Camille?
So we have a wahakura, and a wahakura is made also from the flax plant, and it's a traditional bed that's been woven for baby to sleep in. And in the past, We have, unfortunately, Māori have held the highest rates of SUDI, and so there was a bit of a resurgence, I guess, in looking into these, you know, the cultural practices of using wahakura and how that will make, you know, our people are more likely to engage with using something like that. So, and it's been, you know, really received really well, and the rates of SUDI have come right down. And fortunately, which I do think we probably don't realise how fortunate and how awesome it is, we do have the support from our DHBs, our local district health boards, where they fund traditional weavers to make these beds, and they're not cheap. Like, to have somebody weave a bed, it could be a couple of hundred New Zealand dollars to weave. But they're funded, and then we are simply allowed access to them so that we can gift them to whānau, because then we know they're going to utilise them, and we know that baby's going to be safe. And all the rest of the messages with safe sleeping will, you know, be taken well. Another initiative as well within the DHBs is holding weaving classes or wānanga, where they'll have that weaver that they've been funding run a class and open it up to mothers to be, where they can start learning how to weave their own wahakura as well. So it's pretty amazing, actually, that our hospitals are funding that in support of that. Yeah.
It's wonderful to learn about the financial investment and the support that hospitals and your district health board are providing, particularly as they support traditional practices that have been shown to reduce the instances of sudden unexpected death in infancy, or SUDI, within Māori communities specifically, and support the historical and cultural beliefs and practices of Māori. I want to move our discussion to impact. Just recently, a new study was launched by UNFPA, the International Confederation of Midwives, and the World Health Organization, called Impact of Midwives. And its data showed that even a modest increase in midwife-led care could lead to significant reduction in maternal and newborn deaths, as well as the rate of stillbirths. What do you both see as the impacts of your own midwifery-led care? And maybe could you also speak to what increased investment could mean for you and the Māori community?
Yeah, I strongly agree that solid midwifery care leads to good health outcomes for both mum and baby in all areas, not just safe sleep, not just stillbirths, in all areas of a woman's health. And as midwives, anyone who's a midwife or knows a midwife and what we do, we've got a special access to the whānau, not just the woman, but the whānau. Like, there was a study done here by two midwives, and the information is yet to be published. But the study concluded that when they interviewed many women that have been consumers of midwifery care, they asked these women, what do you expect of a midwife? Just any midwife, doesn't have to be Māori, just a midwife in general. And the list was as expected. And then the question was posed, okay, and if you had a Māori midwife, what do you expect? And the list was the same, but then some. The job role of a Māori midwife is probably twice as long, if not more. Women said that when they have a Māori midwife, you become my midwife, my auntie, my friend. You're going to fix my koro when you come to the house if he has a cold. You're going to tell me how to look after my six-year-old. You're going to also give me advice about whatever else is going on in my life. And I can honestly say, hard on hand, that we often do have all of those questions posed on us all the time. So I feel like it's a really important investment for whoever the ministers of health are, to invest in Māori midwives. We're such a minority, and I'm sure it's the same with every Indigenous culture, that there's a small amount of Indigenous midwives dealing with a high number of birthing Indigenous women. And we're outnumbered, and therefore our reach is limited because we have so many women to look after. We can't do as much as we could if we had more midwives, you know, helping us. And Camille and I have both seen the positive impacts of our style of care on women. And we know this is happening. We might not be experienced researchers and we don't have data to show, but we know it's happening. We see it happening and unfolding in front of our eyes. And I just think that there should be more investment into Indigenous midwives, what they do. Not only can we access the whānau, but we also have a different way of doing things that's easy with our patients. They understand us. We have this innate sameness, even if we're not exactly the same. We know the experiences they're having. It's highly likely that we've had them too. And because we've got the medical knowledge through our training, we can help them get the information they need to keep themselves well and safe, but in a way that's culturally respectful and that doesn't offend, and that also we get the point across to them. We understand all the subtle nuances and innuendos within the culture that a non-Indigenous midwife would probably miss. Mm. Yeah, I could go on and on for days, but what do you think, Camille?
No, yeah, absolutely. I absolutely agree. And there's just a more, not immediate, but there is definitely a quicker trust. Hey, why? Like, if they know that you're Indigenous, if you're a Māori midwife, they are going to be a lot more trusting of you from the get-go. You become whānau, as Y said. Everybody's involved. So your delivery of health is, your reach is huge.
I think they just feel safe with us too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you become the whānau midwife. So so whoever ends up getting pregnant, whether we're talking the next generation and whatever, you're it. Like, absolutely.
And so you bring up the next generation. And I think one of my final questions is, how do you see the next generation of Māori midwives, and how do you increase the numbers? And do you think that there will be, you know, growth within the profession itself?
Yeah, I think Camille and I are always recruiting. So often after a birth, we'll see a young woman there or the woman herself. And we will say, when you start studying midwifery, not if, when you do, give us a call. So we're always recruiting. But also, we truly believe that by getting children involved, we've often had children in the birth pool while mama's giving birth, or big siblings cutting the cord of their little baby brother or sister. And we're removing the fear from birth, because that's how it used to be. People would bring their whānau to a birth traditionally, and we're just reminding people that this is our culture and this is normal for us, and it's okay, and your children won't be scared. I've never had a child cry at a birth. So by letting them be involved in the birth, they're realizing that this is normal, and now, oh okay, I'm capable of doing this. And who knows, if we've planted a seed there in some of those little tamariki's minds that, oh, actually, when I was little, I helped deliver my brother. I can be a midwife too. But also with our upcoming student midwives, Camille and I often take student midwives on placement, but we only take Māori student midwives because, again, we're a minority and we want Māori midwife students to have an experience with us so that they know what we do and how we do it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've kept a really strong bond with the university, you know, the head of midwifery and others that work there. So we are often going down and talking, especially to the first year midwifery students coming through, or we're bouncing ideas on how we can get the word out there to encourage more people to even come to university. We're always involved in some way, always throwing out those ideas of like possible Māori midwifery schools and what that might look like. And yeah, it's endless. Hey, why?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're always trying to, not only us, but other Māori midwives out there. There's many of us that work in, you know, within the hospital, within DHBs, within Ministry of Health, New Zealand College of Midwives. And there's often conversations with other Māori midwives and the head of school about how can we support Māori midwives through their midwifery journey. We know that it's harder for student Māori midwives, and we know that they have a lot more responsibility stacked up against them, often their mothers themselves. They might have other whānau that they care for. They might be caring for an elderly grandparent or younger siblings that they might be the sole caregiver for. So there's, and you know, they've got church responsibilities, cultural responsibilities, work. Often there's a million things that they've got going on outside of studying midwifery. And so we are trying to make sure that they're being looked after in terms of support to get through university, so practical support. When Camille and I were at university, we were also peer mentors. So that's a student-to-student type of situation where you help each other with your assignments and try and get your grades up. And I think that was one of the best things I could have done at university. It was so enriching. Not only did it help us consolidate our own knowledge, but just seeing how you can give a little back to the community gives you so much more in return. And so I don't think I would ever stop giving to student midwives. It's so important to encourage the upcoming generations.
We also have a Māori midwifery group, which is for our own benefit as well. And that's solely for us to come together and feed ourselves and water ourselves and cry and just uplift our own spirits and all that kind of thing, which we also then extend that out to the Māori midwifery students that are coming through and all the challenges, and they come along and we all sort of just get together and break bread and hang out. And yeah, so there's another way to keep people strong and encouraged and moving forward.
And I guess in terms of like changing or adapting the way that midwives in general work going forward, we don't expect everybody to practice the way we do. That's the beauty of midwifery in New Zealand, is that we can all practice how we see fit and change our practice to suit the woman that we care for. Obviously, not every woman in New Zealand is a Māori woman and wants the birth that we offer. But we hope that our colleagues, Māori or non-Māori, see that the way that we work, by allowing women to be themselves and just design their own births, control their pregnancy somewhat, we're there to guide them along the way. We're there to make sure that they're clinically / medically well, and that they have the information that they need to make wise decisions for themselves and their babies. They're already pregnant. They're already clever parents. They're already clever people. And we hope that others see the way that we respond to women with kindness and love and no judgment. There's no criticism of anybody's lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to encourage others to do, is just let women be. Let them tell you what they need from you. We're servants of them. We're public servants at the end of the day. And we're just here to help guide them through their journey. And what a pleasure at the end that we get to bear witness to them bringing their new baby into the world.
I can honestly say, hand on heart, I'm sure you can too, and for our colleagues to hopefully be able to see this in our women, that they are so strong, they are so knowing, and they are so in tune with their bodies. And it's just everything has been so suppressed for so long. So we're just simply the enabler, the fire starter to just, you know, woke things up and get things going, because they are amazing in themselves. They know, and more people need to understand that and need to let them, you know, lead the way.
Thank you, Waimari and Camille, for your incredible service to your community and for your commentary today. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this edition of Friday Podcast, the first in our series on Indigenous midwives. Stay tuned for the next two podcasts in this series on the .mom column on newsecuritybeat.org, or follow us on Twitter @Wilson_MHI. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe to Friday Podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts.